On your mark, get set, let's fry some fish. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, EE Journal's long-standing electronic engineering podcast, written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. In this week's podcast, Sanjay Natarajan from Intel joins me to discuss Intel's technology roadmaps for process and packaging that was laid out at Intel Accelerated last month. But before we bring in Sanjay, you know it, you love it, it's time for a little news you may have missed. Microwave-powered rocket edition. So, what if we could use microwave radiation to send rockets to space? Now, a center concern with rockets and other space-bound vehicles are their fuel payloads, right? But what if we could overcome this heavy fuel limitation by wirelessly transmitting the needed power to the rocket through a beam of microwave radiation? Well, if a team of researchers from the University of Tsukuba have anything to do with it, we will be. Okay, so first, to test this idea, this team used a free-flying drone that weighed only 0.4 kilograms, and they found that it was able to hover for about 30 seconds at the height of 0.8 meters above the source of their microwave beam. Now, it is important to point out that this is not the first microwave beam research and analysis, by far. Work in this field first took place decades ago, but generally that research concentrated on low-frequency microwaves, like a few gigahertz. This team turned that up to 28 gigahertz. And not only did it work, but the efficiency of the process is quite promising as well. This team not only measured the efficiency of the power transfer through the beam, but also the capture of the microwaves by the drone and the conversion of microwaves to electricity for propulsion, as well as other relevant processes. Based on this information and their analytical formula, they calculated the overall power transmission efficiency of their experiment to be 0.43%. Kohei Shimamura, lead author of this study, puts their project in focus like this. We used a sophisticated beam tracking system to ensure that the drone received as much of the microwave power as possible. Moreover, to further increase the transmission efficiency, we carefully tuned the phase of the microwaves using an analog phase shifter that was synchronized with GPS units. Now, this team has also worked on previous experiments where they used a fixed drone instead of a free-flying one as well, and the results from that project were even more promising. Kohei Shimamura goes on to explain how he sees the future of this technology. He says, "These results show that more work is needed to improve the transmission efficiency and thoroughly evaluate the feasibility of this propulsion approach for aircraft, spacecraft, and rockets. Further studies should also aim to refine the beam tracking system and increase the transmission distance beyond that demonstrated in our experiment." So, we're not quite ready for microwave beaming rockets to space prime time just yet, but we're getting there, one drone at a time. So, if you'd like even more information about this study, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. So, before we bring in Sanjay, I thought I should give a little more background on what we will be discussing today. So, last month at Intel Accelerated, Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger unveiled how they will be accelerating Intel's clock rate of innovation, how Intel is putting itself on the path for performance per watt parity in 2024, and the introduction of two breakthrough technologies. So Sanjay Natarajan, Senior Vice President and Co-General Manager in the Logic Technology Development Department at Intel, is here to go into more depth about those two technologies and how Intel is looking to release 5 major nodes in only 4 years, and why they have changed the naming scheme of their process nodes. So, without further ado, please welcome Sanjay to Fish Fry. Hi, Sanjay. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia. I'm super excited to tell you about what Intel's working on.
Excellent. And I'm super excited to hear about it. So first off, let's talk about the strategy behind Intel's new naming scheme. So what motivated Intel to change the name of its nodes now?
Well, as many of your listeners might already know, the traditional nanometer-based naming hasn't matched anything on the actual chip in over 20 years. If you go back more than 20 years ago, the numbers we were quoting for the name of the node, that corresponded to something actually on the chip, usually the transistor gate length. So, Amelia, if you had an electron microscope in your garage, you could take one of our chips or anybody else's chip and actually go measure that thing that we say this is a 0.35 micron node, and sure enough, you'll find that 0.35 micron feature on the chip. That used to be true, like I said, more than 20 some years ago, but innovations along the way have kind of maybe broken that relationship. Technology innovations like high-k metal gate, which Intel pioneered in the early 2000s, strained silicon, FinFETs, they kind of broke the relationship between the gate length and all of the transistor goodness, better, faster, cheaper, that used to get, that really characterizes Moore's law. So over the last, dozen years or so, we've realized that our node naming convention kind of has become a little obsolete with the rest of the industry. In effect, we were sort of undercalling the value of our technology. What we were calling 10 nanometer, all of the experts in the industry were saying, hey, what you're calling 10 nanometer is really what everyone else in the industry is calling a 7 nanometer technology. You're really undercalling what you're providing. So we kind of decided, let's refresh our node naming lexicon, make it more clear, more consistent, more meaningful, so that now we can help the industry and help our customers, including our, new foundry customers, really make better informed decisions.
So Sanjay, what does Intel's process and packaging technologies roadmap look like going forward?
Yeah, now that we have 10 nanometer superfin in high volume production, the next thing coming down is our Intel 7 technology. That'll be later in 2021. It's going to give 10 to 15% transistor performance per watt improvement. And we're going to see it on client product called Alder Lake. We're going to see it on a server product called Sapphire Rapids in the near future. Right after that, we're going to have our Intel 4, which is the first node for us to fully embrace the use of what the industry calls EUV lithography, extreme ultraviolet. That node for us is going to deliver an even bigger 20%-ish performance per watt increase, more than a full node's worth. It's going to be ready for production in the second half of 2022 for product shipping in 2023. And those products are going to include client product called Meteor Lake and a data center product called Granite Wrap. Behind that is what we're calling Intel 3, delivering a healthy 18%-ish performance per watt and ready to begin manufacturing products in the second half of 2023. After Intel 3, we're kind of changing the nomenclature a little bit. The next node is going to be called Intel 20A. And the A is sort of a nod to the angstrom era of technology, leaving the nanometer era and entering the angstrom era. Again, just to remind your listeners, we're no longer measuring anything physical on the wafer when we use these numbers. But we go to this 20A because we're introducing two groundbreaking technologies in that node that'll take us to, performance per watt parity in the industry in 2024, and followed by Intel 18A that takes us to leadership in 2025. The two groundbreaking technologies that you'll first see in Intel 20A, one of them is what we call RibbonFET. This is our implementation of a gate all-around transistor. This is our first new transistor architecture since we pioneered FinFETs back in 2011. The other groundbreaking technology we are introducing is something we call PowerVia. It'll be the industry-first deployment of a backside power delivery network when we launch it in 2024. And then, you know, as I mentioned, beyond that is Intel 18A with refinements to these technologies. And that really takes us to kind of unprecedented qualified leadership in 2025.
So Sanjay, let's talk about IDM 2.0. Now, why do you think advanced packaging is so crucial to this strategy?
If you look at the strategy our CEO, Pat Gelsinger, laid out earlier this year, IDM 2.0 really consists of three aspects. One is building the majority of our products, our internally designed products, on our fab capacity, on our manufacturing network. The second piece of it is using third-party foundry capacity around the world to manufacture our products that we design in-house. And then the third part of it is sort of the complement to that, we becoming a world-class foundry business and a major provider of, you know, Europe and US-based capacity to serve customers globally. Packaging is a crucial component of IDM 2.0 because it really enables us to get the best out of each of these pillars. We can now create products that incorporate chips and chiplets and tiles from disparate nodes across Intel. So we can have bits coming from one node and parts coming from another node, as well as parts coming from an outside foundry. And we use our packaging technology to put these together to make a compelling product.
Okay, so Sanjay, can you provide some more detail into RibbonFET and PowerVia, specifically into the range of capabilities that you're anticipating?
Yeah, thank you, Amelia. RibbonFET, like I said, is going to be our implementation of gate-all-around transistors. We're super excited about this. You know, just to maybe remind your audience, Intel's really been a pioneer in transistor technology. You know, go back 20 years almost, we introduced strained silicon in the industry. We introduced high-k metal gate in the industry. We were the first to introduce FinFETs in 2011. And not only did we do these technologies first, at the time, other companies were looking at alternatives to these technologies and took different approaches to solve the same problems. Over time, you know, proof has come through that everyone has really converged to the Intel solution. Everyone has converged to the same type of strain, the same type of high-k metal gate, the same type of FinFET architecture. And we've really proven over the past 20 years our leadership in transistor technology. And now we're moving ahead to gate-all-around transistors. Now, it's been in development across the industry for several years, and the name sort of describes what's going on here. Now you're going to wrap the gate completely around the channel for the first time. In a FinFET, you wrap the gate around three sides of the channel. If you go back to the old days of transistors, you really had the gate sitting on top, so really just controlling the channel from one side. Wrapping the gate completely around means we get better control of the transistor. We get higher drive current at all voltages. We get faster switching speeds, which ultimately mean higher performance products. And, you know, what we call these sheets of channel, we call nano ribbons. And we can now achieve the same drive current as multiple fins in a FinFET, but we can do that in a smaller footprint. And we can also modulate the width of these ribbons to really accommodate different applications, different kinds of products, really super optimized what we're manufacturing. PowerVia is a different technology that I want to spend a minute on. It really is groundbreaking in the sense that today, if you look at an interconnect system, the interconnects are kind of miles of wire, mostly copper, that sit on top of the transistor layer. And they route power to the transistors, but they also route signals around the chip from transistor to transistor. What we do with PowerVia is we take all of the power and ground off the top of it and we put it underneath and we deliver power to the transistor from the bottom, from the backside of the transistor. So that has a couple really, really outstanding benefits. One is by taking it off the top, you now free up extra space on top. And you can use that extra space to pack your signals lines closer together, really save on area. Or you can increase the size, reduce the resistance of those lines, really deliver what we call faster wires for more high performance applications. And you've just basically created real estate to work with on the area above the transistors. At the same time, by delivering power from the bottom, you virtually eliminate a phenomenon called voltage droop or IR drop, where you know, by using the backside, you can do power delivery to the transistors much more efficiently. Again, you're going to really see the benefit in performance per watt with this technology. And we've been perfecting these over the past several years. And we think PowerVia in particular is going to be an industry first deployment of a backside power delivery network.
Okay, so Sanjay, let's circle back to Moore's Law. There have been several differing opinions on the longevity of Moore's Law. What do you think will be the key factor that will drive its continuation and success?
Yeah, Amelia, you have to go back pretty far to the beginning of Moore's Law and really look at the fact that Moore's Law itself has been evolving and adapting over time. The kind of original idea behind Moore's Law was from a paper Gordon Moore wrote in 1965. That's how long this has been around. You know, Moore's Law is not a law in the science sense. It's an observation. And he observed that the number of, and he didn't even call them transistors, you know, he kind of referred to them as functions on a chip, was doubling every year. He plotted several years worth of that data, and he drew a line through it, actually almost a free-handed graph back then. And he said the number of these functions is doubling every year. A couple of years later, he got more data, and he said, well, it actually looks like it's doubling every 18 months. And then even a few years after that, he added some more data to the graph. In the early 70s, he said, it looks like it's doubling every 2 years. And, you know, and then it's sort of like final answer, mic drop. That's where it stood for quite a while. The number of functions on the chip will double every 2 years. That word functions sort of evolved to mean transistors. In fact, if you go back over a 40-year history, that held true. It was really pretty amazing. If you plot that number of transistors on a chip versus time, and it didn't matter whether it came from Intel or it came from another company, we were moving on that line for 40 years of doubling every 2 years. And again, for a variety of reasons, that slope and that exact definition changed over time. But, you know, as we get closer to the one node, the atomic scale, the angstrom era of semiconductors, that evolution is continuing. We kind of move into a new way of thinking about innovation going forward. And I think Moore's Law is really about pace of innovation. And for me, that pace of innovation is still, you know, what we like to say at Intel, relentless. Our CEO likes to say, until the periodic table is exhausted, Moore's Law isn't over. You know, frankly, Amelia, my version of it is, you know, within Intel, our group, we're really driving this. So we kind of say, hey, until we're exhausted, Moore's Law isn't over. Kind of, you know, very relentless in our path to innovate. So to me, Moore's Law continues for as long as we have innovation in our industry.
That's fantastic. I love that, Sanjay. All right. Well, it is time for your off-the-cuff question, Sanjay. Now, since you haven't been on my show before, here's my standard off-the-cuff right now. So a lot of us can't get our favorite foods because of lockdown. It's maybe the restaurant's been closed. It's in another country. You need a passport to get there. So, Sanjay, if you could have one food right now, what would it be?
My go-to food, if I could have right now, is Xiaolong Bao. I really miss that, you know, and I can get it in takeout, but it's not the same thing as going and sitting there and eating it hot. You know, the soup dumplings are magical, and everything's back to open. That's going to be the first place I go sit down and have some.
I love it. That sounds delicious. Well, Sanjay, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Amelia. Thanks for having me on your show.
And before we go, don't forget to check out my brand new maker-themed monthly fish fry podcast called Makers Today. In the second episode of this series, I chat with Lorraine Underwood about the hashtag Badass Women Makers and Engineers project at Element 14, the cool projects she has created, and why she wrote the book Save the World with Code. And you will not want to miss the next episode of this series launching on August 24th. And hey, if you're a maker and you'd like to be featured on this series, please let me know. You can send me an email at Amelia, that's Amelia, at eejournal.com. Send me a message on LinkedIn or carrier pigeon, you know, whatever works for you. And stay tuned for that brand new episode coming soon. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, who would that be? Oh yeah, me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. And 5 stars, please. Also, if you'd like any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of August 13th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.